Welcome to Season 6 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
I got a chance to play All Plays Soda Jerk back in April, and it's a great tiny box hand management game for 2 to 4 players from Chris Lee and art by Say Beepu. It took us about 15 minutes to learn and play Soda Jerk. In the game, you're dealt a hand of delicious soda ingredient cards, including strawberry, blueberry, banana, kiwi, and orange. Then on your turn, you either one, play a card face down in front of one of the taps, which have the same labeled delicious flavors, or two, flip over a face down card under a tap. Play is going to continue until a player starts their turn with 3 cards left in their hand, or all the players flip 1 card consecutively, or all cards on the table are all face up. At this point, determine the final value of all the taps. You reveal any remaining face down cards and add up all matching flavor cards while subtracting all non-matching cards. A tap can be worth negative points. Finally, tally up your score. Each card left in your hand is worth points equal to the final value of the matching tap. So if you end up with 2 strawberry cards and the tap value of strawberry was 8, you get 16 points. Or it could happen like it did with me where things went negative. Try to get the most points while making your opponents go negative. If this game or one of the other All Play amazing partner games from publishers like Bitwing, Druid City Games, R2I, Post Curious Interests, or any others, you will want to check them out at allplay.com to pick up those great games at a flat rate shipping of $4 if you're based in the US. So definitely check this one out. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 124, Happy Haven. Today, we are joined by freelance game designer, oh my god, I can say words, Serena Fadlin. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super, super excited to chat with you.
Oh, totally. Hopefully my Boston doesn't come out more. I keep hanging out with people from there and I just start talking differently, apparently.
Well, you're not going to be the one with an accent here.
I'm trying to compete with yours. That's so funny. Oh my god. Well, hey, for anyone who doesn't know who you are, where are you from and how'd you get into the gaming industry?
I am from Rome, Italy. I got into the game industry actually in a really, really funny way. I used to work in psychology. I have a psychology degree and I started my career in research back when I used to live in New Zealand. And then I moved back home and I started working as a translator for movies and TV shows for voiceovers. So I was doing nothing that had to do with games at all. And then I was pregnant a few years ago and I had a dream when I was pregnant. And I dreamt that my son, who in the dream was like 3 or 4 years old, when I think of the dream now, he looked exactly like he actually then looked when he was 3 or 4, but I don't know if my brain like replaced the memory or if I actually had a vision of the future. But either way, in my dream, he was playing with something and I asked him what he was doing. And he said, "What do you mean? You invented this?" And that kind of like planted a seed in my head. I didn't immediately start inventing, but when he was born and in the first few months, I was always thinking about this and I was thinking about it. And then I started watching videos and reading books about it and realized that there's a whole job around games and game designing and toy inventing and kind of lit up a light bulb in my head and it's history.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting. Yeah. You just had like a vision of the future and you're like, you know, I'm going to make that future reality.
You know, he was really young and I always thought that it was really important for me to teach him to follow his dreams and to whenever he had something that he wanted to do that he could totally make it happen. And so I figured I had to show him and lead by example. And so I jumped and tried to really make it happen and worked really hard. And luckily it went really well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just saw you win the Rising Star Award. So I'd say you're doing good so far.
I am. It's been a really, really good year. I won the award and now I'm a finalist for the Woman in Toys Award. I won the Woman Award in September. And I also have a game that is a finalist for Premio Archimede, which is an Italian game award. So I'm super excited.
Ooh, that's so cool. And so what was your background before getting into games? I mean, beyond apparently translating things for movies, it's just pretty cool.
Yes, that was super fun. I got all the episodes of the movies and TV shows early and all these super secret file documents that I had to like open, PDFs that I had to open with a password because other people weren't allowed to know what would happen next yet. So it was a few really fun years. And before then, I was at uni and I was studying and I was doing some research. Actually, I had 2 specific areas of interest. I used to do research on schizophrenia and autism. And my other area that I was really obsessed about was the study of happiness, so positive psychology and what makes people happier.
That is really interesting. Let's talk about Happy Haven. For anyone who doesn't know the game, which I'm guessing is quite a few, explain what the game is and how it got created.
So, as I mentioned, that was my area of interest in psychology was happiness. So after I left university, I kind of kept studying and reading and reading about it because it's just something that I'm really passionate about. And I always kept that separate from my games. So I just started designing games and I signed a few deals and mainly doing party and family games. And then last summer I figured I should kind of put the two things together and I said, you know what, I'm going to design a game that's going to include all the research around happiness and hopefully that would leads to a game that makes people happier. I had three games that I wanted to, because I started talking about it in social media, and so I said I'm going to test three games and see which of the three is more likely to make people happier, and I wanted to focus on three different areas in each of the three games. So one was based on kindness, which according to research is something that it really increases people's happiness. The other one was based on kind of like achieving specific goals, just that sense of mastery that, again, research shows that makes people happier. And the third one was a bit more comprehensive. And so the whole game was based on the PERMA model by Martin Seligman, who is the founder of positive psychology. And he has decades of research behind him. And he has created this model, which is PERMA is an acronym, obviously. And it has five factors that he has found through his research that increase people's happiness. And so I created this game where there are five categories of cards, and each of them targets one of the five elements of the five factors in the PERMA model. And it's a light, kind of like mass market party game. It's a bit of a mix between a conversation starter with some challenges, and it's cooperative, so there's some group tasks. While you do all the stuff, you have kind of a mat that has the shape of cards on it, and the mat is like a desert. So you have this desert, and then once you complete the cards, if you are successful, because you're not always successful, you put them upside down, like face down on this mat, and the back of the cards has a drawing. So basically, when you complete the whole 15 challenges that you need to win the game, the back of the cards create like an oasis on top of the desert. So, you know, metaphorically, the group together is creating this nice little Happy Haven oasis in the middle of their desert. And so this is the game that, obviously, I'm talking about it. So out of the three, this was the game that did the best at testing. So first, I did some quantitative research. So my first step was just to basically ask people, talk to them after playing and seeing which one of the three games was best. And once I had the game, then I did this was qualitative, and then I did a quantitative study, which was super fun because I used a scale that's very commonly used in happiness research, and it's called the PANAS. Basically, I measured people's happiness before and after playing, and I then ran a statistical test. It's called the pair sample t-test, which is just what people would use after any other kind of intervention in research. Then I analyzed the results, and there was a huge, huge difference. So the game did make people happier, and that's why I call it the first game that is scientifically proven to make people happier, which I think is super fun.
That's a great tagline, yeah. What were some example questions of what you were asking in the game?
So the factors in the PERMA model are, the P stands for positive emotions. Those cards have mainly conversation starters that are studied to elicit positive emotions. There's a lot of research done on what can trigger these positive emotions. So it's feelings of gratitude, feelings of enjoying times with people. And so the P has all these questions that people get people talking about, things that might make them start feeling a little bit of those warm, fuzzy feelings. And then you have the E, which is engagement, and those cards are more focused on completing tasks. Engagement is a lot similar to flow, which is also a very common concept in psychology, when you are doing something and you're totally absorbed in the moment, and it's a bit of a challenge, but not too much, so your brain is really engaged in what you're doing. So these are group tasks that you have to complete together. They might be fun physical tasks like holding something or balancing something or completing a little challenge. Then you have the R, which is relationships, and these are also conversation starter questions, and they're also very focused on relationships, and especially the relationships in the group. There's some cards that people really loved that are actually meant to have a continued effect after you finish playing as well. So you actually build these relationships with people, because maybe you have a card that says right now you have to set up something for the group to do together. So you kind of like pause the game for a second event and you figure out a day that everyone meets again, just so that the effects of the game can continue after the game is finished. The M stands for meaning, so these are more things focused on what to make you think about what's meaningful in your life, what's your purpose, what makes you feel important, what in life you feel is important, those types of questions. And then the last one is accomplishments. So this is all focused on goal setting, a little bit of remembering past goals that you already achieved, a little bit on setting up future goals for you. So it's a few challenges, a few just conversation with the group. Mainly the focus is to have a moment where you are engaged, where you are getting to know people and getting to know yourself. It's just one of those games that lead you to lots of conversations, and I think it's really cool that keep bringing it in throughout your life. You get to have these little goals that you set for maybe the rest of the week, so the effects of these factors that are proven to make people happier are carried in the following weeks or months or hopefully life.
So what inspired you to like do a game like this?
I have a bit of an obsession on finding out what makes people happy. I haven't always been a happy person, and then I did a lot of work on myself and overcome some mental health challenges I had in my past. And so I have felt on my own skin how it is possible to go from identifying as a not so happy person and then completely changing that, and just knowing that this was possible, which is obviously something that I never expected when I was younger, just really made me want to figure it out. Like, how can this happen? How did I manage to change that? And how can I help other people change it as well? I used to do it through my psychology career, and then once I left that, I just was still very interested in finding out what it was, what these factors were. This area of research has changed a lot in the last few years. But first of all, it's a whole new area of research, but even then, just it has incorporated a lot of things like mindfulness and being present and gratitude and kindness, all those things that used to be seen as more spiritual or, not very scientific, but they are now being studied. And so I thought that was really interesting as well. And so through the years, that has been a bit of an obsession of mine. So I figured once I became a game designer that I didn't want to leave that part of me behind, because I feel that is very important. And I found out at some point that there is, well, a little bit of research done, not a lot, on how games can be used in therapy, like therapeutic games. They are often used in therapy with kids, but not only with kids. And even RPGs are used a lot in therapy, but these are all existing games that have been used to address trauma. But what happens in psychology often is that, which is the reason why positive psychology was founded, is that psychology has for a very long time only focused on kind of the negative, like how do you fix the problems, how do you cure people that are ill. Then Martin Seligman, who is again the father of positive psychology, thought, why are we never studying how do you make people happier? Like, there is all that whole side of, curing illness, which is obviously extremely important, but then what if you're just like a person that has never even thought that they have to cure or change anything, but those people also need to have a better quality of life and improve their happiness? Because I've always thought that there's not enough emphasis of being happier. Like, when you have a problem, you realize it and you have to try to fix it, but then if you are kind of like average, most people statistically don't really make an effort to make sure that they are the happiest that they would ever be. And that has always been something that I really cared about. So then again, I found this area of research of a cross between the games and psychology, so that made me realize that there's a lot to research there and to dig into. Immediately I noticed that it was just about, curing trauma and just finding different ways to get people to open up once they are already in therapy. But then I thought, everyone needs to be happier. So instead of all those people that are never going to reach that place where they find the therapeutic games because they're never going to go to therapy, what if they could buy a game off the shelf and it's a mass market game and everyone can play it? You don't even realize it. You don't even know that it has all this sad research behind it. You just buy it, you play, you have fun, you have a great time. And then as a side effect, you become happier. And so I thought that was a really cool area to explore. And I said, I have this passion and now I have this other passion that are the games, and I have this unique pan of passions that once you put them together could lead to something really great. And so I felt that it was my mission to bring them together and to have a few games out there that sneakily make people happier without them realizing it.
Trick people into being happy. Take that.
Exactly.
And when you were working on the game, how were you playtesting it?
The playtests for the games initially were basically started from friends and family, as it often happens. But then when I actually had to do the study, what was really cool is that once I started talking about it on social media, people started contacting me and they were very interested. They thought that it was something super cool. And so although I'm terrible at keeping up with social media, so I only post like one video every month or so, I still managed to attract a few people attention. And so I realized that it would be easy to have lots of people be subjects of the test. So I had so many people that volunteered as subjects. So I had, I think it was about half and half of my sample was half people live. I organized some live events where I live and just posted on Facebook groups or even just word of mouth. So I had a few evenings where there was just random people coming over to test the games. And then the other half was people through social media. So I just sent them the print and play and the questionnaires to fill in. They just filled in the questionnaire first and then they played the game and then filled in the questionnaire after. And then I had a separate questionnaire as well for just the playtesting questions. So it was half live and half through social media and people that volunteered.
No, that's cool. Especially because I feel like a lot of people don't take the time to like reach out to random individuals. They'll find them more by going to conventions and then, you know, going to like an unpub space or a Protospiel space, which we have in the States. I don't know what the equivalent is over where you live.
There's not a lot here, to be honest, but I feel like once you reach out, there are people, you know, that you need to kind of like convince them slowly. But I just found out now that there are a few events here for playtesters, but I do understand that it's hard for some people to reach out and to ask. I remember when I first started my family, I only started playtesting with my family, and even they were so annoyed at some point. They're like, I don't want to play anymore. It's like every time they would see me, I had like 10 games for them to play.
I relate to this. I do that to my family.
Yes. So like they started hating me. And every time they would see me, they would like be scared that I had more games to play. So then like, it was kind of like scary because then I'm like, if my own family doesn't want to do this, then how am I going to find strangers that want to do it? Eventually, I realized that it's actually easier sometimes because if you go to people that already like playing, they're often excited to play new games. So I kind of left my family alone and tried to find people that I didn't know, which is obviously better for the playtesting as well.
Oh, totally. For the game, I know there's like different types of cards and stuff. How exactly do you play the rules of it?
So it's very simple. You just shuffle and you take the cards one at a time, and the mat has 15 squares that are divided by the different categories. So when you take the cards have the borders that are different colors for each of the five categories of the Pirma model, and the same color is on the board of the mat. So when you kind of take the card, you flip it, you complete the goal, and then if you complete it successfully, you put it face down on the correct color of the mat, and as soon as you complete the little oasis, then you've won.
Cool. And what kind of development changes did you make to the content of the game through playtesting?
A lot to the content. I found at some point I had very conflicting results at the start. Depending on the cards that I had, there were some people that had a huge improvement in happiness. So the way that the scale that I used is a scale that basically measures positive and negative emotions. So through the research, these positive and negative emotions have been shown to be related to happiness. And so maybe it would say how jittery are you feeling now, and that would be a negative emotion, or how excited are you feeling, that would be a positive emotion. I found that although the overall happiness score was improved from the very start, it improved a lot, but some people, I noticed that some of the negative emotions that had to do with like anxiety, nervousness, they also increased a little bit. So I was like, okay, this game is making people happier, but some people, depending on the cards that I get, are also getting a little nervous for some reason. Eventually I figured that not everyone felt comfortable with all of the questions, so some of them were getting quite deep quite quick, and so maybe some groups didn't know each other so well, so they didn't want to just suddenly be talking about all this stuff with people that they didn't know. I had to lighten up a little bit, and there are still a few questions that let you go deep, but I made sure I only included the ones that, you know, you can answer if you want to share, you have the opportunity to share, but if you just want to give a more superficial answer, then you're going to be totally able to do that. So once I fixed the content that way a little bit, that really helped to remove that side of the game where people were kind of feeling on the spot, like they didn't really want to open up that much to strangers. And also what was really cool, because English is not my first language, I found someone who works in the board game industry. Her name is Anne Jones. She manages events where she brings lots of board games and she brings lots of people together, but she also is an editor, so I sent her my rule book and all the text of my cards to make sure it made sense and it was understandable. She did an amazing job, but more than that, she made me notice a few things that were, just to be more inclusive, so I had some challenges that were quite physical, so you might, maybe you had to like stand up and do something, and then she's like, oh, because you're doing a game that's so targeted towards making people, you know, happier and feeling good, then maybe if there's someone that's not going to be able to complete this task, they might feel upset. And so I kind of removed the things that wouldn't be able to be done with certain disabilities, including things like dyslexia, and so things that were harder to do both physically and cognitively. I kind of tried to, as much as possible, to make sure that no one would ever feel like they wouldn't complete a challenge. And so I thought that was very precious for her to bring my attention to this, which I didn't myself, obviously, before. And so I think that was amazing, because I would have never wanted someone to start playing and then they're like, oh, I can't do this. This is not making me happy at all.
Oh, that's awesome that you got that kind of feedback.
So yeah, I was really, really happy about that. So the content changed quite a bit, but I'd say the general direction of the initial content was working quite well as well. But there was definitely some changes to do.
Yeah. And so then how did you get the game like published or out to people once you had finalized the rule set and the cards?
My first intention was to self-publish a physical version of it, but then as I was developing it and people were volunteering and they were super excited, I realized that this really had to be accessible to everyone, and so I decided to self-publish the print and play for free so that everyone could just print it and play it, and it's on the website now. Everyone can, you know, download it and print it and play it whenever they want, which I felt people really appreciated. I talked about all of this on TikTok while I was doing it, and people really felt like they were part of the project because, well, you know, volunteering and being subject themselves, but even the ones that didn't volunteer, they were very invested, and I didn't feel it was fair to kind of like gatekeep it from everyone. I do want to eventually publish a physical version as well, because some people just like it and they don't feel like printing and cutting the cards and all of that. It's definitely in the cards in the near future. People have also asked about like a version for kids and a version for couples, and someone has asked for specific versions that maybe that target specific groups of people, and so I definitely would like to have more versions out there. I'm currently focused on the kids one, which I think would really help. I think with kids are very receptive with these kind of things, and so they have less inhibitions, so it would be really easy for them to, obviously the questions would have to be adapted to them, but I think it would lead to some really amazing results. I often play conversation starters with my son, and it leads to some incredible conversations, and so I expect it to be very cool for them, and also for them to be super open to the effects. So that would be really, really nice to be able to make some kids happier as well.
Aw, I love that.
Thank you. It is a really fun and rewarding project. I would say it has made me feel really happy myself.
I mean, that's good. I was going to say, if it went the opposite direction, I don't know if we're doing it right.
I know, right? Well, it actually happened with one of the three games that I did, which was the one that was based on kindness, and I was like super excited to try it. I had a mechanic that was kind of based on the idea of kindness, and it totally backfired. Like, people were not being kind at all. They were like trying to find their way around it, and them being super, super mean. And I was like, okay, it's not leading where I want to. But interestingly, what also happened is that I had lots of people asking me once I started posting about it. You know, don't all games make people happier? You know, people play because they want to be happy and they want to have fun. So I actually tested that with some existing commercial games as Control, which I won't name, obviously I don't want to get sued. And turns out it doesn't. Like, if some games have other things, like obviously they have, some of them might be fun, some of them might create better relationships, but each of them has different characteristics. But when you actually measure specifically the happiness scales, then not every game actually improves happiness, which I also found very interesting.
So how long in total do you think from that initial idea of making the three different types of games and then putting out your print and play on your website it took for this game?
It wasn't long. I am just one of those people that once you're obsessed about something, I just like put everything into it. So I worked nonstop. I think the idea to start it would have been about May last year. So I think about less than a year, maybe 9 or 10 months.
And did you consider pitching the game, or were you like, no, this needs to be for free, this needs to be accessible to everyone?
I never considered, well, obviously the thought crossed my mind, but I never have felt the desire to pitch it, because I really wanted everyone to be able to play it. But if someone saw it and was interested in publishing it, then I wouldn't rule it out. But I think it would be nice to have both. Like, I don't think, well, obviously people would be like, if there's a print and play for free, then it's not a great investment. But I don't think the two things are mutually exclusive. Well, as we know, there are some very popular games that started as free print and plays. I guess that's not a rule. But I do feel that if you at least leave this version for free, and then even if I myself were to publish a physical version, then I could always change the content, add more cards, better art, because I have pretty basic art, and so it would still be worth to buy the physical product, but at least everyone doesn't have to, which is, I think would be a nice compromise, and then all the following expansions could be, you know, part of the physical only deal. If anyone ever suggested something like that, I do think that my rule would be we still need to have this print and play for free out there.
Yeah. No, I think that's awesome. Do you have like a favorite and a least favorite experience of the journey of this design?
My least favorite was definitely finding out that that one game was making people so mean. I went home and cried.
Oh, no.
But also, I think social media is really hard for me. It's hard to put myself out there. So it was really strange because it was something that I really wanted and that was really rewarding at times, because having that feedback from people and the interest from people really made me feel happy. But also the thought of having to record those videos and trying to be, I would like go to bed every night and I'm like, okay, tomorrow I'm going to have to record a video. And then I'm like, okay, I'll do it tomorrow. It's just something that I really, really struggle with, just being consistent with my videos and with my social media presence. So that was definitely tough. I think it was good for me to have that challenge. You know, I'm going to have to somehow overcome that in the future if I want to still be in the industry. So it was a good first step into it. At least I had some really, really warm feedback. I did have some mean comments here and there, but surprisingly few. So I guess the social media was my least favorite and also my favorite, because I hated having to record the videos, but I loved that sense of connection that you have when people message you. I love, you know what I really love? When they send you a private message, but it's different when they comment and they're like, oh, this is really cool. But then you get a private message and they're like, okay, I tried this. This is amazing. You know, we had amazing conversations after this. Just that feeling that people were there and they were actually feeling it, and that they took their time to write that message and they thought it was important enough to communicate it to you. I just thought that was so, so beautiful, and the whole reason why I did it. So I was like, okay, this is work. I love this.
Yeah. It's always nice to see people resonating with what you made, especially when it's a situation where it's like, hey, here's this free print and play. Like, I intended it to be accessible to everyone, and like, people are actually accessing it. We love it.
Yeah, exactly. And then I posted a print and play and I was like, okay, is anyone ever going to download this? And they did. And I actually had an option. I think I still do. I can't remember, but I have an option that you could make a donation if you want for future studies and whatever. Obviously not a compulsory at all. I was surprised that lots of people did donate, which was amazing. And I am using that now as I'm researching the kids' version. And just that thought as well of people just being like, I think this is worth something. And that felt really nice. It's a bit of a gamble when you put something out there and you never know how people are going to react. I feel like when we are designing games and licensing them, which is what I normally do, I'm kind of like sheltered by all of that, because I just have to show it to the company and then they do the rest. If they think it's good enough, then I'm sure people are going to think it's good enough. And if they don't, I'm never going to hear about it probably, unless I go digging. So I feel a little bit safer from that. But once you post it about it yourself and you're the one that checks how many people are downloading and that sees how many people are watching the videos, then there's a lot of all that kind of social anxiety to put yourself up there and just sit there and wait for the feedback, good and bad, to come to you. But it really went well, so I can't complain.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you measure like how happy people are. Would you mind talking a little more about how you were able to measure that in your playtests?
In happiness research, there are lots of different scales and they are used for different purposes. I attended a course, it was an online course from Yale University, and they have a very, very famous class, which is called The Science of Wellbeing, which is taught by Dr. Lori Santos, and this class is the most attended class in the history of Yale University, and it was a really great class. And when I started researching this, I actually emailed the professor that taught the class, and I never thought she would reply, because she's a very busy lady, but she did, which was awesome. And I asked her which scale she thought would be more appropriate for this type of study, because it has very short-term changes. So there are some scales that measure happiness and well-being, but they maybe give you a picture of how how your well-being is now, and obviously it's not going to change in the next 15 minutes. She suggested this scale because it's specifically used for short-term changes in happiness just before and after an intervention, and so I thought that was perfect. And the scale is called PANAS, which stands for Positive and Negative Effect Schedule, and basically it has a list of emotions, and so there is emotions like I'm feeling interested or distressed or excited, and you give it a score 1 to 5. Then I give that scale so people would fill that in and give that score, and then I remove that and they couldn't see it anymore, obviously. And then they played the game, then they filled in the same scale again, and then you analyze it with a pair sample to test. So you compare the scores of the positive emotions before and after the games and the scores of the negative emotions before and after the game. When you put that together, you get how much it's improved, of how much the changes were. And when you do these types of statistical analysis, it tells you whether the changes were statistically significant or whether it was just, you know, a fluctuation in results. And the changes were actually huge. So it was much more than statistically significant. So that was super, super fun to analyze, because that's my favorite part of the research, just all the numbers and the statistics, which is not loved by everyone, but I do love it.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I was a psych student running any experiment, I was not as huge of a fan of looking at the numbers. It was more that during the experiment, like seeing the results and trying to make guesses on if I'd be right or wrong from it, that I liked.
Yeah, I know, the moment that you see the results is incredible. I do like the numbers a lot. I always have, and I remember in my statistics class at uni, everyone was kind of like coming to me and trying to figure out what these numbers meant. So it was my area it was my little happy place. When I studied psychology, I never wanted to be an actual therapist. I've always wanted to do the research, do the experience, do the studies. So that was super fun.
That's so funny. We're like the total opposites. I did psychology. I was like, yeah, I want to talk to people. I never want to do these like statistics. It was the only class I've ever failed in my entire life was a stats class in college.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I took it with one professor who was very math heavy. I did bad, and then I did it again with a different person, and then I did really good, and I was like, well, all right.
You know, I think that really, really changes the way that people explain these things, because I feel like I loved my professor, and he was a very kind of math number-oriented person, and I had my brain worked the same, so I understood him really well. But then when people kind of like came to me and asked me to help them understand, I realized that their brain was working completely different, so they were just speaking different languages, and so you just had to translate it in a different language, and then everyone else was able to understand it. It's just how it works, but you do need both, right? You need the psychologist that told to people, when you need the psychologist, they like the numbers.
Yeah, so true, so true. Everyone thinks so differently, and how we learn, it's so different. I get massive amounts of anxiety when it comes to test taking and public speaking, which no one ever believes when I say that. It's just how I am.
Because you are an amazing public speaker and you have to do it all the time.
I wouldn't say amazing. I'd say I do it. I just make a lot of jokes and I like to wing it. I improv more than I plan.
Well, that's perfect. I am a little bit of the same, but I love the written test. So that was, I could just be there for hours and I'd be totally fine. But the public speaking is terrible for me as well. I would always get super sick just before, because my body just couldn't take the stress.
I know, yeah, the heart pounding, and you're like, I don't normally sweat from working out, but that will make me sweat.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh. So from working on this project, like, what was your biggest takeaway from the experience, whether it's from the like sciences of it or from the gameplay or just how the audience responded once it was out?
I think what I learned is that this is actually something that I apply to all my other games as well. I have to make sure that I am doing something that I am extremely passionate about. Well, not just in general game design, which is obviously something that I really, really love, but sometimes when you work in the industry, you kind of adapt to certain trends or types of games just because you know they're gonna sell more. But I have learned that whenever I try to do that, it just does not make me happy, and also the results don't come out as good because I'm not putting everything I have into it. And when I started working on this, I just felt like everything I've done my whole life was coming together. Everything I studied, everything I've read, everything I've ever been interested in suddenly was just working so well and clicking so well together. And so that feeling, I told myself, whatever I do from now on, that's the feeling that I have to chase. Just that feeling of the right time and the right place, I'm doing something that I'm meant to be doing. You know, it's just what I'm born for. Definitely something that I've been chasing since.
Oh, that's great. And I know you've been working on a lot of games, so do you want to talk about any of the ones you've got either coming out or just recently released?
Sure. I had two games released this year. One is called Swapple by Gibson's Games, and one is called Danger Hugs by Moco Games. And I have many coming out soon. I have, I think, at least 4 coming out before the end of the year. which is super exciting. And as you know, you were there. I won a Play Creator Awards in June, and that kind of like started a whole lot of new contacts and new people meeting with me and giving me the time of day, which is not always something I take for granted. So that led to some really, really great opportunities. I'm feeling very blessed and lucky. So there will be a lot of games coming out from me very soon.
That's amazing. Yeah. You are a little rocket ship. Reminds me of someone I know. Yeah, I'm super excited to play some of these games coming out and just like hearing about it and your journey and all that. But for my last question, unrelated from anything we've been talking about, if you could magically be the designer of a game you didn't design, which game would you choose and why?
Ooh, okay. So this is going to be an answer from my heart more than from my game designer brain. I grew up playing Rummikub with my family ever since I was a kid. They are super competitive, and my grandparents used to play Rummikub constantly. We just got really good at it from a super young age, so we had these huge family games, and I still think my grandma died a few months back, and up until the week before she died, she still would play Rummikub with her friends every Sunday, all day. So that's definitely a game that's been important in my life, and I have a very early version of it with a beautiful wooden box that my grandma brought with her when she came to Italy after the war. I love that game so much, even after all these years, and I've played so many other games, and obviously I've played some that are really brilliant, but I still think that feeling of when you have all these sets, and then you kind of like break every set, all the sets apart to find a place to put that one last tile that is going to make you win, and you figure out all these little combinations, and you kind of like move the whole table around to combine all the different tiles, and then add that one last tile before you win. It's one of the best feelings I've ever had while gaming in my life.
Aww, I love that. Honestly though, the classics are around for reasons, and if that makes like you and your family and causes those memories, like let's go. It makes it a great game.
Yeah, 100%.
Also, let's be honest, money-wise, it keeps reprinting, so that's also a solid option from that angle.
Exactly.
And so for everyone who's been listening to this episode, I just want to say thank you for listening to Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 124, Happy Haven. And Serena, thanks for being on the show. For anyone trying to find maybe those TikToks you mentioned or just you online, where can you be reached?
You can be reached on LinkedIn, but if you go to happyhavengames.com, you'll find both the print and play for the game and all my social media links. So that's super easy. Just one website.
Sweet. And I'm your host, Danielle Reynolds. If you're trying to find my personal social media, it's Token Gamer, spelled G-A-Y-M-E-R, and that's on like Instagram and Blue Sky and things. Otherwise, as I've mentioned, I started gamedesignunbox.com, and we also have a TikTok and an Instagram under the same name, so please check those out for those short form videos, and maybe we'll see Serena and some other guests on there, so check it out. Thanks for being on the show though. This is awesome.
Thank you so much. It was so, so amazing.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out NoDirectionPodcasts.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out AllPlay at Let'sAllPlay.com. Join us next time.